Everybody, welcome to a Monday edition Bulldog Hour. Gonzo alongside here as always until 3. CG will come up. He and Gonzo will bring you to 6 o'clock tonight. I'll rejoin Christopher as always on a Monday around 3:30 or so. And baseball-wise, it is a respite day for both the Giants and A's. Both had very good weekends, but each will tell you privately it was what might have been yesterday, because for the A's, a great shot to sweep the Astros four. And as much as I think we all understand that it's mainly wild card, we knew it going in. If the A's would have won yesterday, then all of a sudden you start saying, you know what, maybe from 5.5 back, just maybe we can catch these guys. Probably not. From 7.5 back, you're not going to catch them. So for the A's, they're going to refocus. The Yankees come in, which means a split Coliseum crowd beginning tomorrow. For the Giants, the travel day takes them to Wrigley tomorrow. The Cubs have a lot at stake, the Giants as well. And we'll see. The Giants almost got all four in Arizona. We had said going in to that series, they've been playing very well against the D-backs, dominant against the D-backs in Phoenix. And if not for a great pitching performance yesterday, maybe the Giants would have gotten all four. But anyhow, both teams look at the wild card. They've got about 6 weeks to go, and we'll see how it plays out. The only other thing of interest locally for us as far as professional sports, 49ers are on ESPN television on at 5 o'clock. They are in Denver to play the Broncos. So mark all of that down, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow as we get back to our Fresno State coverage. Paul up in just a second. Jackson tomorrow and Wednesday. Andrew will be with us tomorrow as well. Right now, let's bring up the aforementioned voice of your Bulldogs and always a regular visitor for lo these many years. It is Paul Lepler. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, Tony, doing all right. Just couldn't hear you quite clearly there, but I've got you now. Beautiful day. We've spent spent a while talking some Bulldog football this afternoon, getting ready for all our coverage plans at 940 ESPN this year, and I'm pretty confident you'll have plenty to talk about this year, my friend.
Well, looking forward to it, and obviously we know that what happens at the Coliseum, this is the interesting part, Paul, as we've had the discussion over the years when you open up big like this. From a pragmatic standpoint, from the goals that are set forth by a coaching staff, whether they're spoken or not, it is fundamentally win your division, then win your conference, and then worry about your bowl game. That's kind of how it works. You want to win every week, obviously. So these games at the start of the year, you and I both know, if you put them on the priority list as far as meaning in regard to those goals, the first two don't have a lot of meaning. On the other hand, they may be the most important games you're going to play all year long. I mean, that's the balance, right? When you open up against Power 5 schools, one at the Coliseum, the other a team that beat you on the road last year. So I'll ask you, when you look at the game on the 31st, and I want to talk about our good friend David White's piece that he had in the B, which was, I thought, very well done and thought-provoking, as always, from down Porterville land. How do you view the USC game, Paul, as far as import for this season? We know you'd love to go undefeated, but leave that aside because we talked about it last week. Where do you put this USC game overall in this year?
Well, I think it depends on your lens, right? If you're looking strictly from a football lens and can this team win a conference championship, you know, it's not a win or lose proposition on August 31st. If you're looking at it as an administrator at Fresno State and you're saying, okay, won a conference championship last year, but still didn't sell out the stadium. How do we sell out the stadium? Then these first two games, I think, become monumental because it's a chance to get people's attention that aren't already paying attention. It's a chance to set the tone for a season, set the bar for what you're capable of and how big you can draw at home. And, you know, if you're 2-0, you're going to be in the national discussion. The Bulldogs already have 8 votes in the first AP poll that's out today. So they know a win over USC, and those votes are increasing. A 2-0 start, they might be in the top 25. That's the reality of the situation. So if you're saying, in order to get sellout crowds at home, we need to be a top 25 football team and need to be in the discussion for a New Year's Six bowl game, then those first two games become hugely important. Jeff Tedford is a master at not taking on more than one game at a time, keeping his team focused. And he's got his hands full dealing with injuries in fall camp, you know, especially a concentration of him at the running back position.
Right.
And, you know, he's got plenty of things that he has to sort out without worrying about, you know, what happens if I'm 1-1 or 2-0 or 0-2. His sole focus is on going 1-0 this, you know, in that first game. And as David put out in that article you're talking about, I think David said they will go down there and win.
That's
a bold statement. And I think they're going to have every chance to do that if they take care of the football. But when you think about, you know, a brand new quarterback, having some new offensive line starters, having to break in new receivers who are very talented but don't have the experience, taking care of the football is something that we don't know yet if that group can do. And they're going to give us an example and a statement in that direction on August 31st.
And, Paul, I did want to follow up on that about, you know, David saying they're going to win the game. I had mentioned prior to the article, wasn't an offshoot, anything of reading David's article, but I had mentioned to you and others on air that, and it's a little bit of, other than that, how'd you like to play Mrs. Lincoln, to say if the Bulldog team that finished last year were the ones starting this year, there's no doubt in my mind that Fresno State goes down and beats USC, because not only was that team playing at a high level, but they had the experience. And my only hesitancy about August 31, because I think the Bulldogs do have a legitimate chance to win the game, is just what you're pointing out, Paul. There is the unknown. For instance, with Reyna, I think he's going to be a terrific quarterback. Whether you can expect it right out of the chute, his first start close to home at a storied facility, like now the renovated Coliseum, against a storied program, the one that he watched growing up like most kids do in SoCal. Paul, it's hard to say for sure that we're going to see the best of Reyna in the entirety of the Bulldogs on August 31. So to say the team last year starting this one would have won, no doubt. But I guess USC would say, you know what, you're not going to bring McMurray to those guys in. We're playing the team on the 31. That is Fresno State for 2019. Where do these Bulldogs sit in regard to what we saw finishing last year against Arizona State? Any idea?
Well, you know, I think they're in really good shape, but there are so many unknowns. That's the question. I mean, I think the defense has a chance to be even better, but they need some pass rushers to develop. You know, is it going to be Isaiah Johnson? Can Andrew Wright on the other side step up?
Right.
There are some other young men who, if they become eligible this year as opposed to next year, maybe they make a difference. So those questions have to be answered. Michael Walker's making a big position change, and it's a completely different load of responsibility that he has to carry. And, you know, is there a learning curve on that that takes a little longer to develop, or does he hit the ground running? We don't know the answers to those things. And, you know, maybe most significantly, you mentioned the name McMurray. Marcus McMurray did a phenomenal job of having control of that offense, of really executing a game plan, of never letting the situation get too much for him to handle. That said, you know, you have quarterbacks in the system now who probably have better arms than Marcus, or you know, throw a more accurate pass, can use the whole field, and just the physical tools may be a cut above what Marcus brought to the table physically. But what we don't know is, what kind of leaders are they? How do they handle the pressure situation, something that he ended up excelling in? And his decision-making, I think, got better and better the longer he was in the saddle as a Bulldog quarterback. And that's what made him so successful. That went a long way toward making Fresno State so successful. So are these other guys ready to do that? Well, Jorge Reyna hit the ground running. If anything happens with him, you know, we don't know. We have seen zero track record, really, with any of those three guys who are in the mix. Now, I think they all have the potential to do it. I think there are a lot of plays that they can make, but we haven't seen them when the lights are on against top-notch competition, and that's what nobody's going to know. We can guess, and I always fall back on the confidence that you have to have in Coach Tedford and his track record, the way he evaluates quarterback. He's not looking for the same characteristics necessarily as every other coach out there. He has his philosophy of what a quarterback really needs to be successful. And just because a guy has a rocket arm doesn't mean that he's going to be the starter for Jeff Tedford. And we've seen some players come into this program with phenomenal arms and leave without playing because they didn't click. They weren't the right fit. So Coach Tedford, first of all, is looking for the guy who is an extension of his offensive philosophy when he's on the field and can really process those decisions, can read a defense, can make that split-second call that's going to be the difference between a first down or a touchdown and maybe a loss or a turnover. I mean, those are huge swings in a game, and that guy needs to be able to make that right decision the majority of the time, and that's something McMarion really grew into, and they need Jorge Reyna to hit the ground running in that department on August 31st, or else all this enthusiasm and this great momentum that I think everybody around the program feels, you know, could really wane if they stumble or stub their toe in that first game. I don't expect that to happen. I expect it to be a very successful evening there in Southern California. But I don't think anyone can say with certainty what you can realistically expect because there's just no track record yet. There is no sample to draw from.
And, Paul, I think that is the cogent point to make. And when we talk about McMarion, he not only already had Power 5 experience up in Corvallis, not a lot of it, but he had opportunities. But I think both you and I agree that throughout that 2017 season, it was, like you mentioned, a growth factor that really, I think, culminated in the bowl game against Houston. I think that was the McMarion that we said, you know what, he is not a game manager. He's a very careful, intelligent, talented quarterback who knew how to pick his spots, and that meant he hit 2018 with the ground running in a way that Fresno State was able to get it done almost without fail. Like we said, you know what, we talk about perfect seasons. I would make the argument that they were actually closer to a perfect season last year than 2013, though they got farther along simply because, as we've said, Paul, we were waiting for the defense in 2013 to finally collapse because we saw it coming. Last year, take two plays away, Paul, that's a 14-0 Bulldog football team. Take the Winfield play away in Minneapolis, take the Shakir reception in the regular season of Boise, and Fresno State wins them all. You can't expect, as you're saying, Reyna, to be the guy that quickly. That would be not fair to Jorge, right?
Well, no, but, you know, what's fair? I mean, it's a football game.
Well,
and
that's true, too.
You have the job because you're the one the coach has the most confidence in. And, you know, I'll say it again. If there's ever a situation where a guy with that little Division I experience has an outstanding chance to hit the ground running and find success early, it's the situation Jorge Reyna's in. You know, it's his fifth year out of high school. He had JC time. This is his third year in the program. He's been around Coach Tedford. He understands everything that goes into success. He got to witness from the sideline as Marcus led this team to a conference championship last year, and he saw the things that helped and the things that hurt. So he's been taking notes. He's mentally prepared. He's certainly fully engaged. We know he has the physical tools. I mean, that's why he very well could have been the starter of the first game of Jeff Tedford's tenure here had he not injured his finger in the week leading up to that first game. I mean, there was a real possibility that he might have gotten that call. So he is looking at all those factors and saying, everything that's happened so far, all the time growing up with my brothers and sisters in a big family in Southern California when I used to get beat up or had to learn lessons the hard way, you know, sitting out for a couple years and watching somebody else play the position here at Fresno State and, you know, with my lifelong dream of playing Division I football, all that waiting is finally coming to an end, and he gets his big chance on this huge stage in the Coliseum August 31st. I'm pretty sure that he's pretty prepared for that opportunity. It's something he's been thinking about for a long time. He understands those opportunities don't come every day because he's had to deal with waiting. So I think his perspective is dialed in. Obviously, his coach knows what he's doing. And a big part of Coach Tedford's job and, you know, the OC and the quarterback coach come Saturday, August 31st, is going to be making sure Jorge Reyna isn't too hyped up for this opportunity and just has the right state of mind to go out there and execute a game plan. You know, not try to make plays bigger than they are or more difficult than they are. Just do what he's been told and do what he's practiced to do. And I think Jorge has the right kind of head on his shoulders to handle that job.
The other thing I wanted to mention when the discussion was there about Tedford being over the Coliseum, Paul, I've talked to Teddy on and off air a number of times, certainly not relevant now, about the 04 game when you had 1-4 in the country there and you had Aaron Rodgers, who will bring this up to this day, by the way, if you ask him about it, with four shots from inside the 10-yard line in the last couple of minutes, including just missing Jeff MacArthur on a pass, and Rodgers will say if he has one big regret from his college years, it was that game that he should have been able to make that pass. Teddy was that close to being number one in the country. It happened one other time as well when something was going on across the country out of his control where Cal was almost one. So to say Tedford was out for the Coliseum doesn't tell, I mean, it's accurate, but it doesn't tell the full story of how close Cal came to USC. They had a real opportunity, Paul, and I know Teddy would love to get one just for Fresno State in 2019, coming up on the 31st. I'm not so sure he erases any of that, nor does he care at the moment, but I know it's stuck in the craw of Aaron Rodgers and a lot of Cal players, including their head coach at that time.
Well, how could it not, right? I mean, you're so close. And, you know, Fresno State had that same feeling down there. We all remember it. So, you know, for the fans, they can certainly identify with that. Yeah. And there were 20,000 Bulldog fans there that night in 05 when the Dogs almost dethroned that same dynasty that Coach Tedford was dealing with, you know, with Cal taking on USC. So, yeah, that, you know, obviously that's going to be a thought. It's going to be a consideration. But it really has no bearing on what happens between the lines. And if there's anything that it's impressed me the most about Coach Tedford during his time here, it has been his ability to do that, to maintain focus, and not just for himself, but to have his assistant coaches and his players really follow that example and stay dialed in. I mean, I can only think of one game maybe where it got away from him and they looked past an opponent and had to pay the price, and that was his first year against UNLV.
Right.
Ever since then, I don't think you can look at any game and say, you know, that was a letdown game where the team didn't show up as well as it could. And, you know, that's pretty unique in college football, to be able to say that out of 2 years there might have been one game where the team didn't have its focus in the right spot or didn't lock down that focus even if it had been prepared to. And, you know, if that continues, if that trend continues, there are going to be a lot of successful seasons here at Fresno State, and this momentum is only going to intensify.
Correct. Also, as we've had the discussion about that UNLV game, it was a learning experience, and obviously in the cusp of the San Diego State game, a lot of the stuff going on. But Pat brought it up on air that night. You know, he was ready to put the Dogs in the truck very early. It wasn't, and I'm glad you brought it up again, Paul, because it wasn't that Fresno State wasn't prepared. I've heard this from people. I think what it was emotionally they were on such a high, and it was so easy. The first trip down the field, it can be the ultimate trap. And I think that team learned a lot from that, that, like you said, you were prepared to play the game, otherwise you would have fallen back early. It just looked as though it was blowout time, and I think it was after that first quick score, Paul, that they kind of got trapped in a way that it hasn't happened since, and I don't guess it's going to happen anymore under Jeff Tedford. I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And, you know, if you were listening to our broadcast that night, you heard Pat Hill kind of foreshadowing that. You know, when you do have such an easy first drive, it's easy to think this is how it's going to be all night, especially when the opposing team's quarterback is out. And credit
right.
UNLV. I mean, the Rebels showed up. They wanted that game. It was, you know, it was their Super Bowl for that year, and they got it done. And I think what was most telling and reflective of the character of that Bulldog team and the character of this Fresno State program under Jeff Tedford is you saw that team bounce back immediately and not make that mistake again, and still hasn't made that mistake again. So I certainly don't expect it to rear its ugly head this year. And, you know, this is a team that's fired up. They've got a brand new field. They've got some new lights out at the stadium. They can feel the enthusiasm in the community. And they're expecting to see a sellout on September 7th when they host Minnesota. So if the players are expecting a sellout, you know this program deserves a sellout. I think it's up to the rest of us to make that happen. So if you're someone who's seen this team in person the last couple of years, you go out and, you know, you tell all your friends, hey, it really is worth it. This is the place to be. I had, you know, a couple people tell me this week that they'd never been to a Fresno State football game before. And, you know, one of them was my tow truck driver the other night. Ivan, thanks for the lift and for getting my car back home. And I'm hoping he gets to see his first Bulldog football game in person this year. And then one of our pastors at church yesterday on Sunday said he's never been to a Fresno State home football game. So if you have those people in your life, you know, showcase some of that generosity. Be that example. Say, hey, you've never been to a Bulldog football game. I'm buying you your first ticket. Maybe I'm buying one for you and your wife. And then that person's going to pass that gesture on down the road, especially if they come out and they have a great experience. And there's going to be so many reasons to be there this year. A team that has demonstrated on the field what it's capable of,
an influx of new talent, so much of it from right here in the San Joaquin Valley. I mean, young men who grew up here wanting to be Bulldogs, now they are Bulldogs. They're winning games for the Bulldogs. And I think over time, you know, we're going to see more and more that those game days become an opportunity to showcase more than just football. And they're taking some baby steps in that direction this year, where every home game is going to feature a different agricultural product of our great San Joaquin Valley in a fun kind of way. I think the first game, they're going to celebrate citrus. So you're going to get a discount on lemonade at the concession stand. Down the road, who knows? I mean, you may have like a mini food festival in one of the parking lots at Fresno State. But when you grow most of the food for the world, you know, that's a really smart thing to do. And I think those of us who have grown up here and lived here, it's easy for us to forget about that. We take for granted that we can have access, especially this time of year, to fresh produce that the rest of the world envies. But I was reminded of that real clearly last week. My college roommate was coming through this part of the state with his whole family from, you know, from back east, from Pennsylvania and New York. And, you know, half of them had never eaten a fig before, and those blew their minds when they bit into a fresh fig you can get right now. And then, you know, one of the girls is saying, "This is the best peach I've ever had in my life." And we live that every day, so we forget about it. But if other people were to come here from other parts of the country, those everyday things that we take for granted are really big deals, and they raise their eyebrows. So let's celebrate that. Let's, you know, I love that Fresno State is doing that with the agricultural industry, and it can only go bigger and better and continue to grow from here. So let's keep growing in every area, and we know that the coaches are doing their part. We know the players are doing their part. The only thing left to create a sellout is for all of us to show up and tell other people to show up. So, you know, I'll get off the soapbox now, Tony, but it's been enjoyable for me this week to meet a few people who've never been and said, "Hey, let's figure out how to make that happen."
Well, we'll see what happens with this game and what it impacts in regard to the attendance the following week against Minnesota at home. Want to take the break, come back more with Paul. Want to talk to him about Josh Hokit and his ever-changing situation and that four-game redshirt rule that we mentioned when it came about, that there would be implication that would go beyond just having playing time for young players. I want to get to that, but before I do, Paul, I do want to congratulate you and Andrew Martin and everybody on the fact that Syracuse, since you talked about your college roommate, was named the ultimate party school for the year. You have to be awfully proud of that. I would think to beat out Arizona State and Cal State Chico, you must be just fairly giddy to know you guys are now the greatest party school. You've always been in the top 10, but you guys knew how to get it done outside the classroom. Congrats on that one. Any comment?
Well, I've got to say that wasn't exactly my scene when I was at Syracuse. I was much more likely to be playing a little pickup basketball than walking Marshall Street.
I know.
But
if it were your scene, I wouldn't have given you a bad time about it. You know that. I'm only kidding you because I know it is not reflective of you at all.
Oh, Andrew I know.
Martin, yes, absolutely. He was a wild man at Syracuse. You and I have heard about all of that.
I thought you were going to say, you know, congratulations on Syracuse being ranked in the preseason for the first time since 1998.
That's right. That's what I really meant. Yeah, my mistake. Also, one other thing. People that, when we get to the Coliseum, people that say, you know, I remember where I sat, this very seat in 05. You can't say that because they replaced all the seats. And fair to say, Paul, that we're going to see I asked Marcus about it. Going to see a better-looking Coliseum? You think that's the case? More roomy? More leg room? All that stuff?
Well, if they spent $300 million, I'm assuming it's going to be a little better. I have been told that, you know, Pat Hill's peanut shells are going to christen the visiting radio booth at the Coliseum. We're going to be the first visiting broadcast crew to use that new booth. So hopefully that's not the only history that's made on August 31st.
Very well said. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. I want to talk to you about Josh Hoke and everything else with Fresno State football as we are 1 week away from game week. The long national nightmare of a summer without football almost over. We'll take a break, come back with more from Paul on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.
Owning Corporation, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 1797976, DRE License 02063270, MLO Endorsement, call 833-852-6464 for terms and conditions.
Crazy things are going on in the world right now, like owning funding 15-year fixed refis at 2.99 rate and APR. Yes, you heard correctly, 2.99 rate and APR with no fees of any kind. Needless to say, people are going to owning.com for this free closer rate and APR like mad. In fact, if you have both a real estate and mortgage license, we may want to hire you. Look, money is so dirt cheap, most folks are taking cash out of their equity to do just about anything, including sticking it into their bank accounts, just to have it there. Wouldn't you be crazy not to go to owning.com and grab 2.99 APR? No closing costs, no BS, no nonsense money while it's out there? Call 855-5-OWNING or go to owning.com to not miss these monthly savings. 855-5-OWNING.
As Led Zeppelin continues to celebrate their 50-year anniversary, so should you. Friday, August 23rd at the Tower Theater with all-female tribute to Led Zeppelin, Zepparella. Tickets on sale now at the Tower Theater box office, online at towertheaterfresno.com, or by calling 485-9050. Don't miss Zepparella, Friday, August 23rd. Brought to you by White Claw Hard Seltzer, Onikar Fresno, and Coors Light. The bigger the mountain, the better the reward.
Well, the move is complete, even if there are still a lot of little details to take care of. Valley Remnants and Rolls is open on Blackstone, just a block north of Dakota. If you're not sure what kind of new flooring you'd like, this is the place to shop. If you can't find it here, there's a good chance they don't make it. Carpet, hardwood, laminate, vinyl flooring, the selection and variety of all types of floor coverings is just incredible. Wait till you see the selection and compare the everyday savings, 30 to 50% discounts from all the major mills, including Mohawk, Stainmaster, Shaw, and more. No question, it's the largest in-stock selection anywhere in Central California. Residential, commercial, and special buys for all landlords.
Hello, this is Bob McParland. We're very excited to be introducing our new store on North Blackstone, just one block north of Dakota. Why not make it new again at Valley Remnants and Rolls?
Hi, buddy. Welcome back to 32 Bulldog Hour to 3. CG comes up. Ian Gonzo bringing us 6 o'clock. Giants traveling to Chicago, already there, as a matter of fact. They start a series tomorrow, early afternoon for us, against the Cubs over on 790. It'll be the A's and the Yankees, so four teams all chasing playoff berths. The Yankees are going to win the East. Obviously, the Cubs are in a battle for the Central title. In the National League, they also have a great shot at a wild card if that happens to get away. Giants have a chance, but they still have teams to climb over to get to that five seed. And the A's still have the Rays. And they know that somebody between Minnesota and Cleveland is going to end up in that wild card mix. And then you still have to watch out for the Red Sox, who have recovered now to win 5 in a row. And I'm going to say it one more time. They have too much talent, too much championship pedigree behind them right now to ignore Boston. That 8-game losing streak made it tough. But I'll tell you, coming down the stretch, I'd like to see the Red Sox way, way back, because they will be really tough the last few weeks to get that last playoff berth. All right, talking, as always, in the money with our good friend Paul Leppler. Paul, I want to talk to you about the four-game redshirt situation. You know, I talked to Teddy right when it came about, and one of the things that I asked him was, can anybody coaching-wise know for sure the implication? He said, no, we're figuring it out as well. And now what we're seeing is what was initially a rule that was thought to be ostensibly for the younger players to get some experience and not burn a year. It's turned into a strategic maneuver. Does Hokut fit that mode now? Does he fit a four games or less mode, Paul? Or are they going to take the wraps off and say, if we need him, no matter where it might be, running back in this case, he's going to play the whole year? What do you think?
Well, that's always a possibility, but I think that's what the rule has turned into, is a chance for coaches to experiment. And you never know what they're going to stumble onto. If you have what amounts to a free year or four free games for someone that they're not going to be penalized for playing in, they don't lose a year of eligibility, I mean, you can try all kinds of crazy things. Now, you don't want to go overboard and suck up too much of your practice time or, you know, dilute the efficacy of that time investment. But, you know, with Josh Hokut, here's a guy who would compete in anything you can imagine. I mean, it might be badminton, billiards, tiddlywinks, whatever.
We've seen him as an All-American wrestler. You know what he can do on the gridiron. The guy is a competitor. So for him to get the chance to go play four games, he doesn't care where you put him. I wouldn't be shocked to see him, you know, play offense, defense, and special teams in one of those four games. It could absolutely happen. But to have the luxury of a guy who has played that position in this offense and maybe most significantly knows the pass protection schemes, and you can plug him in there for any four games where you think you need him, and it looks like you're going to need him in that first game against USC because of other injuries at that position, what a great luxury to have. And kudos to Coach Tedford for saying, yeah, this is what our plan was, but the circumstances changed, so we have to adjust our plan. And, you know, I know Josh Hokett, he'll be up for whatever the team needs. He'll leave absolutely everything on the field. And, you know, you're in pretty good hands when that guy has a large role in the game plan.
Paul, you're right. The other thing is, and he made mention of this already, it's like second nature to him to come back. It's not like he's learning a new position. He said the footwork, everything. It's so ingrained, it doesn't take any time at all for him to get right back in the running back mode. That's really important for just what you brought up. If you want to try to move positions, you are chewing a lot of practice time up. With Hokett, you're not having that problem. He is ready to play running back. And between you and I think he really enjoys running over people. Is that fair to say?
I don't think that's a secret. Without a doubt, he is built for collisions and toughness and grinding at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, we might even see a more effective Josh Hokett than we've seen in the past. And I thought he was very effective, especially 2 years ago in the first year of Coach Tedford's offense. But when you think about it, if he knows, you know, this is a limited opportunity, I only have this many chances to go out and do this, you know, he's all in. And, you know what the plan is. The plan is for him to play in four games, then wrestle, and then be a starter right next year at middle linebacker. That plan could change. I mean, who knows? Maybe he really catches fire in the backfield, and they say, hey, we want to leave him there next year. You know, knowing him, he'd probably lobby to get some snaps at quarterback. But I think the good thing is fans could look forward to seeing him help the team early in this season. And you really have to take it 1 week at a time. So if you don't need him in the game plan in week two or week three, you keep him on the bench and you save those extra bullets in the chamber, you know. And I'm confident we're going to see all four of those games be taken advantage of this year that they have Hokett available. And if it does get into a situation where because of injuries they really need to have him play all 12, 13 games this year, then so be it. But right now I think the plan is get him in there where you need him and try to preserve that year of eligibility.
Paul, last year at this time we were wondering how long it would be and if we were going to see Ronnie Rivers. As it turned out, we saw him, and by the end of the year he was magnificent. Now he's got the hamstring issue. It doesn't appear to be a major problem for the year, but it might impact the start. Are you concerned at all about Ronnie for the entirety of the year?
No. It was good to see him back out at practice and
right,
doing his thing, and I don't think you should be any more concerned about him than anyone else. I mean, it is a little scary when you have a rash of injuries at the same position and all of a sudden at a spot where you thought you were really deep, you're not as deep as you thought. But, you know, they have guys that can get it done, and he's one of them who's proven it. So you don't operate in fear. You go out there with confidence, and when something happens, you make adjustments. And, again, credit the coaching staff for making that adjustment with Hokett. And, you know, it's when you think about the relatively little time that Josh Hokett has been in the football program at Fresno State, but the gigantic paradigm-shifting changes that he's been through and how many times he switched sides of the ball, very few players would be able to handle that. But he's one who that's really no big deal to, just the way he's wired. He's ready.
Also, with George graduating now, is it okay for he to be the hammer? Is that all right? Can that be passed along? Do you know? Do we need Helmut's consent? How does that work? Because that works out nice, because Hokett is definitely a hammer. So can you ask the one-man executive committee, Pat Hill, about that, if he could okay that? What do you think?
You know, and Pat was here just a little while ago. I should have thought to bring that up. But, yeah, now that George Helmuth is no longer playing, the hammer nickname, I suppose, is eligible for redistribution, and Hokett would be as good a candidate for that as anybody. But I tell you, there's some young guys that are going to be turning some heads as well. There are some young players in that secondary that I think people are going to come to love. And I think this defense this year is going to be just as entertaining to watch and just as stingy as these last two defenses we've seen since Coach Tedford took over, with Burt Watts doing such a great job on that defensive side of the ball. They've been, you know, really in the top 10, 15, 20 in the country, depending on what categories you're looking at. And I expect nothing different this year.
Paul, since the Hammer has been part of Fresno State, the lore up through Pat Hill, all that stuff, you're touching upon something now that might be relevant. Should it be an honor like captaincy that's passed along every year to a player? You know, I mean, kind of like everybody wearing 42 for a while in Major League Baseball to pay homage to the great Jackie Robinson. Should we have the Hammer every year passed along? And like I said, one man, Pat Hill, determines how it transfers to who? I mean, what do you think?
I don't know. You know, he and John Baxter used to use the Hammer for whoever had the big special teams collision, and then he carried out the next game. And, of course, we'll see John at the end of the month since he's back in Trojan land. I don't know. My preference is you attach the nickname to fit the player, not fit a player into a nickname that already exists. That's, you know, I think it's real easy for us to use the same kind of terminology, and sometimes in our play-by-play calls, and we can get, you know, into ruts or patterns or tendencies that are more about us and less than about what's happening on the field. So my thought on nicknames has always been, well, what's the guy doing and what does that evoke? You know, if you're seeing this for the first time, what's that first word or thought or visual that comes to mind? And that's how you want to assign a nickname or come up with it. So I don't know. Maybe Hokett's something different than a Hammer. Or maybe it's a, you know, more minute specification on the Hammer. You know, there are lots of different kinds of hammers, Tony, so we could have the whole toolbox over there.
Okay, here we go. That's right.
Short maybe we can get someone to sponsor it, right? There's a hardware store in town.
Okay,
yeah.
So like Ronnie Rivers, that could be the ball peen hammer because he's a bit smaller but still delivers a punch. And you know what? I'm thinking way too much about this already, so we'll let it. 242 on August 19th, we will officially put this onto the back burner, way on the back burner, and we'll see how it plays out.
Keep chiseling at it, Tony, and we'll file it away somewhere. And,
oh, man, you know. That's right. Yeah, way to bring it to an even higher level, Paul.
Did you say level?
Yeah, boom, thank you. You're right. You really did bring the whole – he had the whole toolbox, ladies and gentlemen. We say this about players. We're saying about an announcer. He brings the entire toolbox to the broadcast booth.
Well, Tony, what's the real measure of a man, you know?
Oh, man, this has taken a really unfortunate turn. All right, I want to ask you here about something I talked to Andrew Jackson. Not Andrew Jackson. We used to have the Andrew Jackson Hour, if you remember. Matter of fact, it was at noon on Fridays, and I think we're going to revisit the noon hour in a couple of weeks when you guys are in L.A. I think the show for the day will be starting at noon because of other programming, but we used to have the Andrew Jackson Hour because Andrew Martin and Jackson Moore were on. But I asked both of those gentlemen, who will be with me later in the week, about the preference for Muti, tackle or guard, from their point of view. Paul, I know that decision belongs to Teddy and to Grubb and everybody on the line. But for you, just watching, Natani, where would you prefer to see him, just from a fan standpoint? You like him in space at tackle, or you like him at the guard where he can pull out and be that road grader to lead? What do you like?
Well, you know, if the cloning technology were a little more mainstreamed, I'd like him at both. And actually, you know, you said Andrew Jackson. I wasn't thinking about our president on the $20 bill. I was thinking about a heck of an offensive lineman that Pat Hill pulled in from Northern California.
Correct.
And I'd love to see him out there at one of those guard spots. But
It was an unimpeachable performance, I believe, the Andrew Jackson.
There you go.
Drive safely. I'm here all week, everybody. Yeah. Try the broken leg of lamb. Yeah.
Go ahead. Was that hickory spiced, Tony?
Yeah, that's what it was, exactly.
So with Muti, you know, I think it's very possible that he ends up at left tackle. That gives you some comfort with a new quarterback. And it really comes down to, what's the plan B at both those positions? Are you losing more in who your left tackle is by moving Muti to guard than you are with who your guard is if you keep Muti at tackle. So I think that's the shell game you're playing. It's not so much about Muti, because I think you're confident that he can handle both of those with outstanding execution. It's about what's your better option at the other position. So you've got a transfer from UCLA. If he can handle the left tackle position and you move Muti to guard, then great. If you feel more confident in, you know, having Woodley at guard, it looks like Abs is pretty established at the other guard. If you see someone else who emerges from that sea of linemen that you say, you know, having him at guard is a better option and keeping Muti at tackle in that scenario, then you go with that. So it's really not so much about Natane, I don't think, as it is about who else really plays himself into a chance and an opportunity and a deserved opportunity to be that opening night starter at USC on that line.
I'm not going to call it an issue, but the Matt Smith factor, Paul, I've talked to guys like Mike Webster. The late Mike Webster really had an unfortunate time after his playing career, but was a Hall of Famer when those great Steeler teams were on the field in the 70s, winning 4 in 6 years. I wasn't the tallest guy in the world. I had mentioned that to Jesse Sapolo, who was all around the 49ers line but settled at center and has 4 Super Bowl rings to show it and has a little bit of a relationship, as you know, speaking of the offensive line with Roman Sapolo here. Those were not the tallest guys. Do you have any concern at all about Smith's size or at least his height?
Not if he's the guy the coaches have confidence in, you know, and Jesse Sapolo was actually at practice this last week.
That's what I heard.
There's a great example that you can draw from there. There have been examples here in this program of guys that were undersized who got it done. And the guy who's next to me in the booth every night was a great example of that. I mean, he was an All-American center at UC Riverside, even though he didn't have the stereotypical or prototypical size. So I think what you want is somebody who's a gamer, somebody who really plays hard, who knows what position that he's supposed to be in and how to line up his fellow linemen, and just holds things together. You don't have to be dominant at the line like Muti and be blowing guys off the ball. You just have to do your piece of it and get everybody else in a position to succeed. So if Matt Smith is the guy who's ready to step up and do that, I mean, he's been in the program now for 4 years. He's waited his turn. He's paid attention. You know, comes from an outstanding high school program at St. John Bosco. And sometimes those guys who are a little undersized just want it a little bit more. And how many of our favorite all-time Bulldogs were cut from that same cloth on both sides of the ball? Hey, you could put Jeff Tedford in that category, right? He didn't have the stereotypical quarterback height. And look what he did. He came here and he broke records, and now he's back as the head coach. Look at Tim Skipper at middle linebacker. Look at Robbie Rouse at running back. And, again, lots of guys on that O-line. If you were, you know, pouring the mold and trying to design your robotic player to fit that position, he doesn't look like Matt Smith. But Matt Smith is saying, hey, I have everything it takes, and nobody's going to play harder than I am, and I'm going to do everything I can to earn that starting spot. And when you have a player like that, you know, Josh Hokett, George Helmuth were the examples of that the last couple of years. When you have somebody who wants it more, it makes you want it more. And you have to try to keep up with that guy's desire and his work ethic and his commitment. So if that is the benefit, the dividend that O-line reaps from having Matt Smith at center this year, that everybody is given a little bit extra, that's going to be a really big deal for this football team.
Also, Paul, it should be noted that the Pacheco, you were just talking to Chris, I know, as you guys were going over stuff for game days, coverage-wise, I mean, Chris showed that, and he was an all-PC2A performer, obviously, in the nose at Fresno State, but he mentioned that when he went to Rams camp, you know, he was outsized by everybody, yet made that team, and the year after the strike was still right there, and I've said to this day that if he decided to stick it out, and I know he had other business that he wanted to take care of, I still think he had a career beyond that as well, but he was undersized. But you talk about want to. Has anybody ever had a motor, whether college or pro, that ran the way Pacheco's did? I don't know if anybody had more than that. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, and you and Pat Hill are on the same wavelength, because in this meeting we just had, that's what Pat said. He's describing Matt Smith at center, and he said it's Chris Pacheco playing center. So if people have some memories from that 85 team and, you know, all those great ball games, then that's pretty high praise to assess before Matt Smith started a game. So let's hope that he is that kind of guy. He's ready to go. And, you know, speaking of Chris Pacheco, he is one of the top dog award winners this year. So the night before that homecoming game against Sac State, he's going to be all decked out in a tux. I can't wait to see it at the Save Mart Center.
That ought to be terrific. I do look forward to that. And I also should mention here, before we go any farther, I have a couple minutes to go. Paul, I do want to come back to our great friend Ray Ocanto and get some sort of update from you. I know that Ray is fighting the brave fight. Anything new at all from the time we talked last week?
You're a mind reader, Tony. First you go with Chris Pacheco, and then the moment that Venezuela, Ray's native land, gets a walk-off win in the Little League World Series.
Series, yeah.
And I'm sure Rayo is watching that right now and pumping his fist. I got to watch a little League World Series with him the other day, and he was really enjoying it, and it brought back a lot of memories for us from that other World Series out in Omaha. But, you know, Rayo is at home now. He has a lot of friends and family that are caring for him. He's just trying to be as healthy as he can and keep eating and take every day as a gift from God, because the doctors told him he should have been gone a few weeks ago, and he's still here. There aren't any medical options for him as far as treatment or surgery. He's relying on the power of prayer, and he's thanking God for the extra time he's gotten this far and hoping for more. So for everyone who has been praying, I know he wants to thank you from the bottom of his heart. And, you know, if you haven't been, now's a good time to start, because we know what he means to our community. We know how much he has to give. Yeah, he would absolutely make the most of every extra day he receives. So whether that's, you know, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 years, 2 decades, let's keep praying for Ray and hope there is just a phenomenal story that he's able to tell someday.
And no question, Paul, very well said. Paul, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Have a great week, and I'll certainly be in touch. Take care.
All right. See you, Tony.
All right, guys. Paul Leffler, we'll take a break, come back, wrap things up, get you ready for CG and Gonzo. They'll take you to 6 o'clock. Giants and A's are off tonight. You can find the 49ers on ESPN television tonight at 5 o'clock in Denver. Take a break. Wrap it up after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.